Nate Rifkin. Thanks for coming on, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing really, really wonderful. Thank you for having
me. No problem. I'm excited for our conversation today. So, Nate, so you're an author. You've got a best-selling book called The Standing Meditation. It's all about your story and how you found Taoism and Taoist meditation and how that's helped transform your life and you know, done many great things for you and afforded you a different kind of life than you had imagined. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm really excited. So thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited, too. And I hope, you know, I can share something from my story that helps, you know, change the life of someone listening.
That's the goal. So how about we start off? Why don't you just tell us a little bit about how you kind of found Taoism? Where were you in your life when that was happening? And yeah, we'll take it from there.
Certainly. You know, and the way I found it was I kind of had to crawl through my own personal hell to get there. Because I definitely do not have a spiritual background. In fact, I was born to a family where everyone was very closed off. And it was not a loving family. And my parents were just, they weren't equipped to raise children very well. So I grew up actually a very miserable kid, and an angry kid, and an awkward kid. And as I got older, I remained awkward and became more and more depressed. Because, you know, as children got older, I saw them around me, they'd make friends, they'd have fun. And I just grew more and more angry with myself and really started hating myself. And I'd hated my life. Mm-hmm. And I was just very lonely. And I thought to myself, as I got older, I thought to myself, well, when I move out, I can start my life over because I'll be away from all this misery. And I went to college. I grew up in Massachusetts, so I went to UMass Amherst, and I thought this is my chance to start over. And within a day or two on campus, I remember just realizing or thinking to myself how wrong I was, because even if I physically left my home and my original environment, I was still taking all that pain with me. And I was still taking with me all those old emotional patterns. And I was still taking with me all my awkwardness and lack of confidence. And now I was surrounded with a sea of people who were older than, you know, the people I knew from high school. They seemed like they were even more developed and more ahead of me. And I was just comparing myself to everyone around me, and I just felt really hurt, and didn't have a lot of friends. Or I mean, and those I did have, it was a very surface level thing. These were not deep friends. At the time, the only thing I had really going for me was I really loved working out. I loved going to the gym because it's my one chance to like deliberately change myself, and it was a chance to get into my body. I didn't have the language for the sort of thing at the time, but getting into my body actually felt a lot better than trying to think about my problems. But the trouble was, as much as I enjoyed that, everything else in my life was kind of going downhill. My grades were going downhill because, I mean, I was depressed, so I didn't care about my grades. But I thought to myself, I want to go into business somehow for myself. Self-employed business owner, entrepreneur, I didn't know what, but what I did start thinking was it's probably not going to require I have this college diploma on my wall. Right. So do I want to slog through this misery for 4 years for something that I might not need? And I started thinking, no, I probably don't. So actually after three semesters, I dropped out. Said goodbye to no one. I'm sure
just walked out.
No one really saw I was gone. I mean, really, it was halfway through the year, so I just packed up my stuff, and I'm sure they found another. I told the office of the college. They probably just, my roommate was probably just like, oh, I got a new roommate. So, I mean, he was never there anyway. We had like two conversations, so But, you know, the cool part was I did make a go of being in business for myself. I started an online-based business in, like, the health and fitness niche. And I was like, all right, college didn't work out. I'm still a miserable guy. But mm-hmm. I dove into self-help. Like, I really started soaking this up because, you know, I was super young at the time. And I figured, oh, all this stuff is going to work great. I could, you know what? If I'm miserable, right. I can set goals. And make more money. I can visualize what I want because that's what I was learning. If you visualize something and feel it, you know, yeah. it'll come true or whatever if you work at it. And all that jazz. And I really made a go of it. But as time went on, I failed at all the goals I set. And I had a somewhat of a knack for business and advertising and marketing and writing. I love writing. But I didn't really have much business like experience in terms of the fundamentals, and I didn't really have a good group mm-hmm. of people to help me. So my personal credit, like I was using that to fund it, and I started maxing out credit cards. Like I was having hit or miss success, but it started being right. more of a miss. And I was scared because I was going deeper into debt, and I was still this miserable, lonely guy. And I was getting more and more depressed, and I wasn't eating well. My life is really kind of mm-hmm. crumbling, and I was becoming suicidal. And it just killed me because it's like, I've been trying all this self-help stuff. I yeah. really have been. So why isn't it working? Is it me? You know, and I got very jaded. So that's kind of like right. the low point. Now the light at the end of the tunnel for me was that I had a mentor at the time who I was learning business and marketing from, but he also had a more kind of a spiritual side to him and practices he knew about. And he decided to start teaching some of these, and he started teaching disciplines from a spiritual mm-hmm. tradition called Taoism. I'm like, I didn't know anything about Taoism, but he would talk about how ancient Taoists, it's like a spiritual tradition that goes back thousands of years, and there'd be these practitioners on like the other side of the planet, and they'd become enlightened, and they'd meditate on mountaintops and caves. They're incredible martial artists and had these cool powers and abilities. And I was yeah. like, oh, that's cool. That's super cool. And it really appealed to my ego. And even on a deeper level, actually, I was kind of drawn to it. And it was so different from everything else I tried mm-hmm. because it wasn't about your mind. Now, we can talk about this later. It's more about your body. So he taught like one, you know, the fundamentals of how Taoists like meditate and taught like a fundamental exercise. And I started practicing it daily. And I started with just a minute and I started to feel better. And then I had some interesting experiences. Sure. So it's a meditation okay. done standing up. And what's fascinating about it is we can dive into like the mechanics about why it works, but the essence is you stand and you tuck your hips slightly, like you're sitting on a really high bar stool mm-hmm. and you unlock your knees. So you're kind of like your legs are a little bit bent, and then you like tuck your chin down. So you raise the back of your head up. So it's like right. you're lengthening your spine. So you're standing with your knees unlocked, your feet are facing forward, and you're like lengthening your spine from both ends. And this allows energy to flow through your body at a much, much more powerful, deep way. And you do this while also breathing deeply and quieting your mind and getting and slipping into this meditative state. So instead of just sitting on a cushion or lying down on a couch, you're entering into the state while standing in a position that, quite frankly, at first right. will challenge your muscles. Okay. So that was the practice. And it was super cool for me because it's like it combined sort of the challenge and the physicality of the workouts that I'd love so much, or just, you know, exercise in general, but it also integrated the more energetic spiritual side of meditation. Mm-hmm. And I'd never had that before. That's what started to turn things around for me, because for the first time, I wasn't
right.
stuck in my head, which all that self-help stuff, all the different aspects of it, everything they had in common was it was still keeping yeah. me trapped in my head. and making me obsess about my head.
Yeah.
or what was rattling around in there. Yeah. So for people I knew actually started to remark after I started doing this meditation for a few weeks, it's like, there's something different about you. You know, you seem more confident, you seem brighter. I was like, well, that's super cool because they don't know. So it's not just something I'm thinking is working. There's real effects going on here. And I was even like at that time in my life, I was drinking alcohol every morning. But as I did this exercise or this standing meditation, I started feeling so good from doing it that I didn't have the need to drink alcohol in the morning to get that same kind of buzz. So I actually stopped drinking in the morning, which was very interesting for me because, again, it was another like objective, like real world result.
And it wasn't what you were trying to do either, necessarily.
So exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It wasn't like willpower. I didn't set a goal. I wasn't even having that intention. But it happened. And same thing with my thoughts. My thoughts started to like, instead of having such awful self-hating thoughts, they kind of started to soothe away. And I wasn't really like trying at that point. And my emotional state changed. And again, I wasn't necessarily trying. I was just trying to, you know, do this super cool meditation. I was feeling really, I was like, oh yeah, this is neat. So that's how things start to turn around.
There is definitely an interesting relationship between the traditional self-help books, which tend to focus on trying and willpower and goal setting and trying to figure it out, right? As opposed to more ancient like wisdom traditions that are less about focusing on like what you have to do, and it's more just how you do it. And it's like, if you just do the practices, the effects will come, right? And you'll see that positive effect in your life, and you clearly saw that, you know, just with your everyday state of being, and your relationship with alcohol changed, and your relationship with people changed, and you weren't even trying to do that, right? I mean, you were in some sense. There was still, you know, a drive to improve or to feel better or to whatever it is, but it wasn't like you had a checklist of like, all these things need to change and I need to change them through effort and focus and the willpower. It's more just like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. By this day.
It's a different kind of goal
specific.
Setting.
It's like, oh, yeah. 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 I love what you say. Yeah. Yeah. I love what you say in terms of like, the older traditions, it's about how you do it. And that subtlety it's trickier to grasp. But it's so worth it because, yeah, they figured it out. There's subtleties to how you go about everything rather than just diving in and taking massive action.
I mean, the weird thing about it, which is kind of like paradoxical, is that you know, it's not about, I mean, it's about how you approach things and how you do things, but, you know, mentally it's very difficult, or some might even say impossible to grasp, because you can't exactly figure it out, right? There's no clear answer. I mean, you might get an explanation where someone says, oh, it's because of this and this, but it's like, yeah, but you didn't solve the problem using your mind, which is what the mind tries to do, right? And so it's difficult for people to engage with it a lot of the time because they meet that barrier of like, well, this is where your mind has to take a rest and something else has to come through.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like the paradox, what I thought of was that trying to figure it out paradoxically pushes you away from actually achieving the solution. It's almost like you're trying to dissect something instead of actually like diving in and resolving it. So it can be very tricky and frustrating because that's not an intuitive thing. I mean, you know, our instinct is to try and figure stuff out because that's what our brains are designed to do. It's like, we got this big hammer. It's going to want to nail something.
So what happened after
then?
So you started seeing these changes, right? And then what?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting because I didn't really have the language for it at the time, but what was going on is this energetic practice was sort of, it was guiding me along like a spiritual path. I mean, we're all on a spiritual path, but I guess you could say it was almost like I was really like starting to run it now, you know, I was like really diving into like that phase. So what happened to me is what happens to a lot of people who go on the spiritual path, especially this kind of phase where it becomes a more conscious evolution. And that is my life got worse.
Yeah.
Or it seemed to get more chaotic. It did get more chaotic, but seemed to get worse. I had a business venture with two partners, and we started butting heads more and more. And eventually we split apart. And I found out we split apart because I woke up one morning and they had actually locked me out of the business. Because we had like some stuff you could log into online and they changed the passwords on me.
Yeah.
And it was just like, what a nice way of dealing with it. I see what's going on here. It was interesting. But, you know, I had enough presence of mind to be like, it's okay. This isn't something to get worked up about or start fighting about. This is a time for me to kind of keep working on myself. So that was just one thing in just a big snowball of other stuff that was like rolling and crashing. But the short version is, I went so much into debt that I couldn't even like juggle credit cards anymore. So I actually ended up getting a job spinning a sign on a street corner while wearing a costume for, I think I started at $10 an hour, $10.25. And I was really thrilled to get that job because I was scared and I needed to pay my rent and food. And because it was really cool. I could listen to audiobooks all day. It was a physically demanding job, but it wasn't that bad. And I still could go home and my mind would be fully engaged, so I could still brainstorm like how to improve my career and how to revive my career. So I did that, and I also actually ended up having to go through a bankruptcy because even with that job, like I couldn't even pay the minimum payments on all the debt collectors who were hounding me. But it was really actually beautiful because of the meditative practice I was doing, which I maintained, by the way, throughout all of this. It was like the one thing that was like I was working for me. I realized that this is like my chance to start over. And that didn't mean everything was going to be easy. It just meant I had a chance to start over.
Yeah.
I had a chance to grow up. Because back when I wanted to be, it's like, oh, I want to be this entrepreneur, this business owner. It's like, I needed to learn how to save money. Just that level of basics, like earn more than you spend. And getting an hourly job for 10 bucks an hour is a great way to learn how to do that and to bust through the limiting belief that, I can't start saving now. I'll do it later. No, this is the universe being like, no, you're going to learn to do it now. Or we can make it worse. One or the other. It's like, so I was like, okay. So that's kind of like how slowly I was changing my inner world. I was the happiest I'd ever been in my life. And this was my outer world.
So that inner world had to change to meet first.
That inner state.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I was fighting that my whole life until I really started working on it.
A lot of the time it seems,
first.
You know, like it seems very natural to look for answers or reasons in the external world that are causing the suffering, you know, that you might feel inside. And you know, anyone in any position in life could definitely write out a nice long list of all the things that are problematic and that are causing hassles and difficulties. And it's different for different people, but certainly the common theme between them is that it's something out there and it's not something inside. And then for some, or for, you know, some of those, something changes where you're like, oh, the outside world's, it's important, but it's not going to fix how I feel, right? That's got to come from the inside out. And then once you do work on that, then things in the outside world tend to fall into place a bit better. And if nothing other than your perception of it, right? And which changes how you then approach things and how you respond to things, because it's not so critical anymore for your happiness, because that comes from inside. And so to a greater or lesser degree, you know, if you're content inside, then whatever you end up doing on the outside, it's okay. And the irony of it is that it actually tends to work out better once that happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is the great irony. It's why there's so much paradox in like the spiritual walk, because I think you put it perfectly.
Yeah.
We want to fix things on the outside. And I get it. Of course we do. But what makes, you know, working on ourselves inwardly so beautiful is that we grow and develop ourselves in a way, and we learn the lessons we're supposed to learn, so that, and I really believe this is true, so that the universe is like,
right,
okay, you don't need that challenge anymore. Like, I've learned that I've done the proper work on myself when the challenge on the outside resolves itself. In fact, it kind of disappears so fast that it's almost like I don't get to officially resolve it. Like, it could be a conflict with a person, and instead of like resolving the conflict with that person, they might just exit my life. Or something, you know, something like that. Or I used to deal with, like, really, sometimes I get really mean managers in my career. And then I realized once I resolved that wounding, which came from me as a child, I didn't have to duke it out with a mean manager. I just got a new one who was a lot nicer. So, I mean, and of course this process, like, it's not as like cut and dried and magical as we'd want to be and as quick and instant, but when we start working on ourselves in this way, it's fascinating to start observing the patterns and how it's like, oh yeah, that's true. This inner process changes the outer state.
And it's a very strange
yeah, so it's really beautiful.
Path that, you know, people are on. And, you know, I guess there's an argument to be made that everyone is on it, whether you know it or not. And then depending on how invested you are in it, then it depends on how conscious you become of it, right? But, you know, there's sort of no denying that life is about growth and evolution, right? And the way that happens is through challenge and through difficulty.
Yeah.
Despite what we might think we want, the biggest lessons come through, you know, the biggest so-called failures or the biggest challenges, because that forces you to really deal with it at a ground level, right? Whether it's like your financial challenges or it's relationship challenges, it's like at the time they tend to suck, right? But once you get through it, which, you know, you do, because time moves and everything changes all the time, and you do get through it, and then you come out on the other side sort of stronger than you would have been had it just been sort of handed to you, you know? And so it's a very interesting dynamic. And yeah, I also like what you were saying about you know, all the paradoxes on the spiritual path. It's very hard to come to terms with, because it doesn't match our, the sort of logical thinking that we like to involve ourselves in, right? And so whether it's the fact that, you know, the best way to sort of invest in your future is to invest in the present, that kind of a paradox, or, you know, another one is how, like, well, the past and the future are kind of just like mental realities, and the only thing that exists is the present moment, and yet it doesn't, because the past and the future do exist in our world, and we have to deal with them, and we make plans, and we have memories, and, you know, we anticipate things, and that's just how we have to exist. But fundamentally, the present moment is all you ever get, right? That's just it. It's just now. But it's a weird paradox that it's difficult to wrap your head around. But if you can accept that, then you can get the benefits from it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's really interesting. Also, before I forget, something you said earlier about how it could be very strange and how, but everyone really is on the spiritual path. It just reminded me, according to the Taoist tradition, we reincarnate, and some souls are young in that they're just kind of starting their human incarnation, and there's going to be a lot of them. And some souls are much older. This is like far from our first tour. So that's why you can see a lot of people on this planet, they're young souls. So they're dealing with just the basic lessons on how to be a kind, you know, loving human being. Whereas some souls are more, they're much more in service, because they've been through a lot of that. And according to the Taoist tradition, that's what's so beautiful about this realm, is that we all coexist. I mean, it's painful and challenging, but it's unique in that we're all coexisting together. There's a story my teachers tell where they say, this realm is the only one where you can sit on a bus and have like a murderer you know, next to you, and a saint sitting beside you on the other side. In the other spiritual realms, everyone's kind of separated.
Yeah.
This is where we all kind of come together.
Because it's true. And also, you know, the people who we often denounce as, you know, criminals or whatever it is, it's like, yeah, but if you have a conversation with them, you'll see they're not so different from you, right? I mean, some parts, yeah.
And once you strip away the outer stuff, it's like,
if you want to look at like how they got to where they got to, you know, it's there's a good reason to think like, well, if you were in the same position, given all the past experiences and conditioning and whatever they've been through, you probably would make a similar choice, even if you don't like to admit it. But you know, we're not so different.
Yeah. It's like the saying, you know, there but
yeah, exactly,
was there but the so there but for the grace of
so
God go
once
I.
you okay so back to yeah. your story. So once you've started on this, you know, this journey, and you're sort of getting more involved with the Taoism and the teachings, and you know, you're continuing with your meditation, presumably you increased the frequency or at least the duration of your minute a days. I don't know where you're at now, but it's probably a bit longer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because when I first started, I added 5 seconds a day. I forget, honestly, how I came up with that. But I was like, you know what? I think part of it was because, you know, when you're standing with your knees unlocked trying to meditate, it's a challenge at first. So I figured if I add 5 seconds a day, my body will adapt while not necessarily knowing the difference. Like if I doubled it every day, soon I'd be like, oh my God. But I could kind of slip into longer time periods, and it worked. And in fact, eventually after a few weeks or even earlier, I started adding more. So eventually I got up to like 8 to 10 minutes, and then I was doing 25 to like half an hour. And that was like mentally a big challenge. I remember being like, sitting by my computer just being like, am I really about to go stand and meditate for 25 minutes?
Yeah.
And I'd spent like all this time sitting in my chair just like, I could have been doing it by now. But I always still did it, you know, even as I complain, I still did it. So yeah, absolutely. So throughout this time, and in fact, when I became a sign spinner, I even started coming up with excuses, because I'm like, wait a minute, I'm outside spinning a sign standing all day. Am I really going to go home and do a standing meditation? And I tested it out, and I realized, you know what? Yeah, I am, because it's nourishing myself, and it's a different form of standing, because, you know, my knees are bent. So instead of like crushing on my, you know, kneecaps, like if you stand in line at the bank for an hour, you're gonna be like, oh my goodness. But it was my muscles and tendons had gotten stronger, and it was really like a matter of relaxing into the stance, because my tendons specifically had gotten stronger. This will happen to anyone who does it. So yeah, at that point, and it was funny, because I didn't have much of a life, so I actually experimented with doing an hour a day. again, I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids.
Yeah.
I just had this job and not much else. So I'm like, I'd gotten rid of my television. So,
in terms of the mechanics of the position.
I was up to an hour a day.
So you say
at this point.
The knees are unlocked or bent, slightly bent, and your neck is slightly extended with a tin through a chin tuck, not a tin chuck. And then is there a lean? Like, is it the kind of lean that you would do in terms of a squat or like a deadlift?
Yeah.
Or do you try and sit straight up like you're doing a wall squat? Like, what's the position of your back? Straight up.
It's a great question. It's absolutely straight up. That's a great question. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up because oftentimes, you know, people who are into physicality, especially in the West, when we do like a deadlift or a squat or take an athletic stance, there's going to be a slight bend forward, you know, because we bend our knees, we bend forward, we engage our hips. And that is a strong position. Mm-hmm. With this meditation, it's more about opening ourselves up. So you notice when you test it out, when you straighten your spine, you tuck your hips and you just unlock your knees and you tuck your chin and also hold your arms out in front of you like you're holding a big, big old beach ball. And when you do it where your torso is vertically aligned, and most people underestimate this. Not everyone, but I would say 8 out of 10 people lean forward rather than too far back. So it's safe to assume leaning forward is going to be the bigger issue. So you're almost, my teachers will explain, like, you want to be like royalty. Right. You want to be like, just feel like you're wearing a cape in your royalty. It really helps. Now, this aligns you with the energy of the heavens and the energy of the earth because you're straight up.
Okay.
So this
that
is
makes
all
sense.
About
so
opening yourself
sort
up
of
to
a,
that energetic
A natural
energetic
but
flow.
Unusual position, one might say, right? It's not a everyday kind of thing.
Yeah, I would. No, it's not exactly, which is why it's important to do this, because, when we're just living our lives every day, we're not, our bodies are not in a position where we're able to absorb and cleanse our energy. Similar to the way if we're just, you know, running errands and stuff, we're not naturally in a deep, quiet, peaceful, meditative state. Now we can get there as we work on ourselves, but it's not our default as an adult. I would theorize that a baby would probably have an easy time with this position, because there hasn't been a lot of programming on how to sit or stand. But also like when we're standing like this, it's all a means to an end of being able to relax physically into the position while opening up the channels of energy. Like if you've ever gotten an acupuncture treatment, the needles were placed along meridians, which comes from Taoism, by the way. This stance is all about standing in a way
that
opens those meridians ourselves.
Out front?
Yeah. It's super cool. Yeah, in fact, there are different variations. The variation I learned was to have your arms out in front of you, so your palms are like at heart center level, and literally just imagine you're holding a big beach ball, and you relax your elbows, so your elbows are a little bit lower than your palms, and what you'll find when you get it right, it's like you're forming this big circle of energy, and you'll find that as you relax into it, and you're standing straight up, it's like your back, because of the way your muscles and tendons are designed, your arms float. It's super interesting. And that's when you get that floating sensation when you're in this posture, that's when you know the energy is really starting to flow. So, and that's how I was able to hold it for an hour. It's not because I was like, it's because once you relax your muscles, it's like your tendons support you like a big wraparound that just holds you in this position and allows you to settle into it. Some of my teachers who've gotten to a very, very advanced level, they're able to hold this and their body actually thinks they're sleeping. So they're able to enter that brain state and that state of relaxation of sleep. And as a result,
that's amazing.
They sleep less at night.
Wow.
But, so, but I, yeah, they, I they're guess, just as refreshed.
And once you've done it enough and you've practiced it enough, yeah, your body can become conditioned to hold it without much effort, right?
Yeah, it eventually gets to a point where there's almost zero effort, so that it really becomes a mental thing. Like when I started, it was a physical thing. Then it was an emotional thing, because when you meditate, especially doing this, emotions will pop up.
Right.
But then eventually it really becomes a choice.
Because it's interesting that you said that it started as a physical and then it went to emotional and then finally mental. So what's that process like? So obviously, in the beginning, it's very physical because you're trying to get your posture right. You're trying to do it the right way or how you think it should be done, and you're trying to figure out how it feels, and it's all relatively new. Mm-hmm. And it's because you've most people probably haven't done it before, at least not for any concentrated period of time. There's a learning curve of that requires concentration, right? Just like when you learn anything, if you learn weightlifting or if you learn how to ride a bike or do something like that, like it's weird in the beginning because you got to figure out how everything moves and the right way to do things. And, your focus becomes very much just on trying to maintain the position. But at some point, some sort of like muscle memory kicks in where you don't need to focus on your position so much because you're somewhat used to it, right? And then your attention can then focus on other things that are happening. And, because we're emotional creatures, I guess, that's why you start to experience emotions during that time. Is that kind of what you've experienced?
Well, yeah, it's, and with the emotions, it's because when you get into this position, you're opening yourself up to start cleaning up and resolving emotional blockages. So old traumas that were kind of buried somewhere in your body.
That's interesting.
It's like your body's like, oh, I get to finally resolve these for the first time. So that's why it comes up. While I mentioned that it's like it's a physical, then emotional, then mental, these cycles will repeat themselves because every time that, like, even today, it's been 15 years, but today, like, I was like, ooh, because I'm still like relaxing more and more. It's like, oh, cool, my body adjusted to this level, so now I can start relaxing even more. To an observer, your average observer, maybe they wouldn't see a difference, but I could feel it. And someone who's trained in the staying meditation would be able to probably see, oh yeah, I see what you're doing there. So, and the emotional processing is also something that's going to be a pretty consistent process. But what's cool is once you start and you start going through these stages, it also becomes mentally a very easy thing you do by choice because you know what's going on. Right. It's like, oh, yeah, I just got to settle and relax again. It's like, and when emotions pop up, it's like, oh, yeah, I've been through this. Yeah. I get all like worried and frustrated. I remember something from 10 years ago. It's like,
yeah, it makes sense, right?
I know what's going on
there's
here.
There's well-established literature on trauma and emotional pain being stored in the body sort of at a subconscious level that pops up every now and then. If you're not ready for it, and if you are, then you can let it flow through you and just get released. As you say, like the more it happens to you, the more accustomed you become to the feelings and the sensations that it's not so drastic and there's not that need to be like, I need to get rid of this feeling. It doesn't feel nice. Or, how do I distract myself or, just push it down or whatever it is.
Right. And especially because a lot of people, I think, believe something's going wrong or that they are wrong in some way. And they're not. It's actually a good thing.
I mean, that would make sense, right? Because
fear, just like even from my experience, it's like, well, process.
Let's say all of a sudden you don't feel good for some reason. You feel anxious or you feel depressed or you feel whatever it is. You're like, well, something must be causing this. Right. And then you sort of look around and you're like, well, everything seems to be okay outside. So I need to either, blame something that's happening just out of my you know, perception for what's going on. So it's this is causing it or whatever it is. Or it turns inwards and you're like, okay, well, this then must be my fault or I'm the problem. So I need to fix myself or something like that, right? And so there's just that level of non-acceptance of it's fine to just feel bad sometimes. Like things just need to flow through you and you don't have to know necessarily where it's coming from. Although you might, it might come to you, you know, you might get some memories or associations or whatever it is. And, you know, that's fine. Like that's part of it too. But it's not a bad thing. It's just, it just needs to flow through you, right? So it can be released. And in terms of like the breath work, what's that like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or is it just...
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, go for it.
Sure. It's really about breathing into your belly because that engages right. your lungs to inflate and deflate fully. And it calms you, calms your central nervous system, and allows you to relax deeper. And by breathing deeply into your belly, you're massaging your organs, which is, they store your emotions big time. So it's great for emotional processing. So the, you know, the basic idea is you can place one hand on your belly and one hand on your chest. And when right. you inhale, make sure that the hand on your belly rises and falls, whereas the hand on your chest remains still.
Yeah.
Because instead of like taking a like a almost like a panic-induced yeah. breath where you're like, huh, you're expanding your lungs down. And you know what's interesting about this is when a lot of people start doing this, it can feel
yeah.
weird. It can feel very strange and uncomfortable because it's just not the way they're used to breathing, but that's okay. In fact, when the emotions start popping up, they might think, oh, I'm, you know, I'm, it's almost like I'm having a panic attack or I feel super frustrated or weird, but really it's because you're relearning to breathe in a way that helps you thrive. So that is the way to breathe while in the stance because it helps you relax, which helps quiet your mind, which allows you to go deeper into the meditation,
wow.
which helps yeah. you relax
I mean,
your muscles.
It is, right? And
which
it's something helps you that's, quiet your mind. What's crazy about it is that it's such ancient wisdom that it's been around for so long and it hasn't really changed, nor has it really needed to change because it's so fundamental, right? And you can see similarities across multiple different traditions of... you know, whatever it is, it's meditation yeah. or yoga or breath work or, you know, there's various forms of it. But like ultimately, they're kind of all doing the same sort of thing in just various modalities and ways of, you know, expression. And, you know, perhaps they do different things. But the essence of all of it is that it's like, no, you just need to learn how to be a real human, right? Which we don't really get taught yet.
Yeah. 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 What my teacher likes to say, it's like we're restoring factory settings. You know, we came out pretty good. And I love what you say because, the way I like to say it is energetic anatomy is energetic anatomy and physiology. So all the ancient spiritual traditions got it. They just might have mapped it out using different language and might have approached their progression differently. I'm not really an expert on Buddhism too much, but from what I understand, they work with the head center, the energy sure. centers in the head first, whereas Taoists start kind of more from the bottom up, and each has its own advantages and disadvantages. But yeah, working with your energy is working with your energy, and it's just a matter of. I think it really is just a matter of finding the tradition that resonates with you, because I think there's going to be, it's not just one, but there's going to be at least one that resonates with you. And I think a lot of people, they might learn about one and it's not really their thing, but there's going to be something else that does resonate with you. Cause you know, for me, you know, I have a deep love yeah. and appreciation for Buddhism, but And other traditions too,
clicked.
But Taoism was really just
And it's worth trying, right? A bunch of things to find what works for you.
I get that. And I think everyone has
like,
that.
I mean, you know, I'd heard of multiple forms of meditation and tried a few. And, you know, until I sort of met you, like I'd never heard of the standing meditation. I mean, at the closest is walking, right? Which is a common one. But never just a stationary stand. And so it is, I mean, it's extraordinary to try out different things and see what works and how it feels and how the body responds to these different positions that we don't normally put ourselves in. So, you know, I would definitely encourage everyone to at least give it a try for a few days. It's certainly worth it. In terms of just to, okay, let's circle back to your story now. So once you started, once you started with, you said things started to get better after they got worse, which, you know, is a nice, you know, courtesy of life, is that sometimes you're like, I'm going to make a change or something's going good. And then life's like, yeah, but guess what? It's going to get worse first. and then it will get better. Yeah. So after that debacle, all that you went through for a few years.
Thank you for having us.
When did you feel like things were... like really changing? So you had mentioned that when you had started this job as a sign spinner, you were like the happiest you've ever been, despite not having the, you know, quote unquote financial or occupational success that might, you know, that one might think you need to be happy. Just doing the simple, well, not so simple, but I mean, you know, relatively simple, not easy job of, you know, standing outside for 8 hours or whatever it is in a hot suit, spinning a sign in the sun on the road, you know, with cars driving by. Like, it's not necessarily the most pleasant job, but you had sort of gotten to a point where you weren't, you didn't feel resentful of it. You didn't feel like it was beneath you or that you deserved something else. You had just kind of accepted that, well, this is what you need to be doing right now, and it's going well, and you're enjoying it, and that was great. And so how long did you do that for, and then what happened afterwards? Yeah.
Well, I was under the impression that I'd be there for maybe 3 months to get back on my feet. But I actually ended up working for that company for almost 3 years. I think it was something like that. And it was a wonderful time because it was a chance for me to start reflecting from a calm, centered place, not from this manic, like I got to get stuff done, but from a really centered place. Like, how do I really want to live, and how does how I feel and think on the inside really start reflecting in my behavior and my circumstances? So I went through another cycle of it would kind of get a little more chaotic before it got better. So I worked there for 3 years, and in fact, I even got a promotion. And this whole,
it was, executive sign
what
spinning.
Was it? It
online.
Was basically like, I helped out with the company's online marketing. That's what it was. Yeah, exactly. I should have gotten a business card or something, but anyway, and it was neat. And everything happened as a way for me to work on my sense of maturity and deservingness and social maturity and discernment. It was really beautiful in that sense. It was like life was giving me this sort of easy way to ease me back into functioning like a human being. Because oftentimes I think people sort of dive into a spiritual path or study or practice as a way to escape life.
Yeah.
But it's not. Everything is integrated. It's a part of life. And life is a part of your spiritual walk. So I recognized that actually everything I was going through was a way to actually mature myself. So eventually what happened was, despite everything I was doing, the company actually eventually went out of business. And it was just a matter of like,
shit happens.
That was just the way the market went. It's kind of like today with the lockdowns. You can have a perfectly great business, but if customers aren't allowed to come in, It's too bad. It's not you. So eventually that company went out of business, and I was terrified, because it's like, I thought to myself, like, I'm right back where I started again. It's like, I'm still this guy looking for a job. Mm. So I got a job loading trucks, which was it actually paid a little bit better, but it was brutal. I mean, it was tough. Wow. Like, sign spinning is okay. It's tough, but it's still fun. You're standing outside. Loading trucks is it's like a 12-hour workout. It was really tough, and I was really scared. But fortunately, this whole time, throughout these like 3 years, I was networking. I was meeting people. I was still trying to make it go like as a self-employed person, because I did learn the skill of writing and marketing and advertising. So even if I didn't achieve my original like entrepreneurial dreams, I got a valuable skill set out of it. And I was slowly realizing maybe that's the path for me. So eventually what happened was it was crazy. One day I woke up and I had a funny feeling. So I did my standing meditation, feeling good. And I log on to my online banking, and I saw my account was actually in the negative, and I was shocked. And I realized that I had written a check, and rather than the check bouncing, my bank did the whole overdraft fee thing. And they hit me with like four of them. So they hit me with like $130 in fees or something like that. And I thought this was crazy. So I call them up and I say, look, my bad for writing the check.
It's a bit of a dick move.
So I get one overdraft fee. I understand that. But to hit me with four of them, that's a little extreme. So I tried to talk them out of it. Yeah. Oh, it's just like, what's up, guys? Yeah. So I got on the phone with the manager and all that. Oh, and he said, oh, I'm sorry. It sounds like you're having rough times. Because I was like begging with them. And he's like, we, as a courtesy, will remove one of the fees. One. Oh, that's lovely. I was like crying. And I hung up the phone. And I was like breaking down. I was just breaking down from this. And then I had this weird moment where everything shifted. And I think it was a result of all this inner training I'd been doing, where I remembered I knew someone that I was learning from who was also kind of in the business marketing world. And I had had an idea to work with them somehow, where I was just like, hey, you've got clients. You could subcontract some of your work to me. You can get me for dirt cheap because I need the work and you could just do your thing. And I never quite worked up, I guess, the guts to really gumption to just reach out to him. Well, in that moment, I'm like, that's it. I'm going to do it. So I actually sent him a letter proposing that. And he got back to me and said, okay, hey, you know, I'll keep you in mind. So again, it wasn't this universe, like, ooh, wah, instant, like, gratification. He said, I will keep you in mind. I might be able to put something together for you. And I was like, that's cool. Within like 3 or so months, he introduced me to a company that was just looking to hire someone to work in the writing and advertising and marketing department. And there were a bunch of applicants, but because of my relationship with this person, he had some sway. So he was like, hey, this guy, Nate, you got to put him on the top of your list. I didn't know he was doing that. And I got the job. And that's how my life finally outwardly turned around. In fact, I gave the truck loading place or whatever it was. I had a couple of truck loading jobs. I gave them 2 weeks notice. I packed up my stuff and I actually drove out there. My everything worked out. My rent was my condo was like month to month. So I told my landlord I'm leaving. I actually donated some of my, I couldn't take my bed with me, but I was actually able to donate that, which is pretty cool. And I drove across the country in my car and started a new life. Everything just kind of fell into place. It took a long time, but it was like life was preparing me for that eventual breakthrough. So that's sort of the, and since then things have been like super cool. Like a few years later, I met the woman of my dreams and we were dating for a while, and I proposed to her, and she said yes, and we've been married for about 8 months now.
And writing a phenomenal book,
and so that and all
changing lives, you know,
and happy as can be, and talking to you.
Yeah, and I mean, the strange thing about it is that,
yeah,
you know, had you not gone through all of that,
3 years ago, I decided to write a book.
We wouldn't be here today. I mean, I don't know where we would be, perhaps, but it certainly wouldn't be here. You know, just, I mean, and, you know, anyone can say that about wherever they're at in their lives. Yeah, it's exactly. Like, well, you're there because of everything that's happened, good and bad or whatever it is. It's like, well, that it's exactly who you're supposed to be right now. And, you know, I think that what's interesting and inspiring about your story is that it shows... It can be an example for people of, you know, particularly like young people who are like, well, you know, I don't know what I want. I don't know what to do. Everything sucks. I don't know how to exist in the world. I was never really taught properly how to, you know, manage life and how to manage this or that, or how am I supposed to find stuff, or how am I supposed to do this, or whatever it is. And it's like, and you can get stuck in these, you know, terrible depressions and maybe it manifests for some as anxiety, or it doesn't matter what it is, right? Or some physical symptoms that you might get. And it's like, well, yes, like it does suck, and it's, you know, wouldn't recommend it necessarily to people, but it also comes to a fruition at some point, right? And things change. And it's not to say that, you know, your life will forever be positive only now for the future. Like, that's not, unfortunately or fortunately, depends how you look at it. That's not how life works. It's like, no, as you evolve, guess what? Here comes some new challenges to meet your new strength, right? And that's fine, because that's how it is. And you'll manage to deal with them despite the stress or the whatever it is that's caused by it. And, but lots of good things come along the way, right?
Yeah. I love it. You remind me of two mm-hmm. teachings from the Taoist tradition. One is that when you work on something and you develop yourself, you qualify for a bigger opponent. Now that doesn't mean necessarily a bad thing, because it could be the opponent. I'm using air quotes here. Of now you qualify for the challenge of helping others. It might be more complex and require more discernment. And the other phrase I remembered was that the universe is never going to hand you a challenge that you cannot that you're not good enough to face, or that you're not qualified to face. Now that doesn't mean it's a ticket out of discomfort or growth, but it's really it can actually be
sort
really
of exactly what you need at that moment, even
and
if
helpful
you don't
to realize
so.
The reason I'm being hit with this is because
you'll find out at some point
somehow I
why.
Can handle
and it's comforting, right? But it's also a little bit unnerving, because it means that sometimes life is going to hit you with a challenge that'll take just about everything you got to push through it. But as you say, you can do it, right? And I mean, it's a little bit scary, but you know, maybe another comforting part is that, well, that's what everyone gets. Even animals and plants and rocks. It's like, it's not just us. It's like life is about evolution and challenge and growth and pushing to the limits, right? And once you push the limits, like, that's where you see what you're capable of and what, you know, you're potentially capable of too.
Absolutely. Exactly. One of my teachers said, you know, we're not here to shop. We're here to change and die.
Yeah.
And not physical death, but die in terms of the old. I mean, eventually it's on to do
and,
this.
You know, it's
but
a good way to look at it.
Die in terms
like
of our old
when
selves
things change.
Dying
you
away.
Know, when beliefs.
I mean, we are in that arena for growth.
Beliefs that you've had for a long time change,
for,
or patterns of behavior, or ways you view the world, or do things. It's like, well, yeah. I mean, a part of you is dying, and a new part is growing, and And that has to happen if there is to be change, right? There can't be change just magically. It's something's got to go. Something's got to give in order for something to arise, right? And it's not necessarily a fun process all the time. And it's mentally and emotionally draining or physically draining or all of the above. Absolutely. Or whatever it is. But, you know, for me, it's just like the image of the phoenix rising from the ashes, right? It's like you don't get that unless the phoenix first bursts into flames. And, you know, when that happens, which it does, you can deal with it. And, you know, obviously there's lots of ways that people should support themselves. Exactly. And have, you know, some are luckier than others that they have family or friends or whoever it is that can help them through it, or, you know, faith in something bigger that helps too. And there's all sorts of ways, and everyone's on their own path and will meet challenges that, you know, affect them differently. And comparing yourself to other people is not really going to help. And perhaps that's why the self-help books tend to sometimes fall a bit short, is because they're like, well, I did it this way, so you should do it this way too, because it will work. And it's like, well, maybe some of it's going to work, but it's also, that was your journey, right? And if you can find the essence of what they're trying to say, that's where the true change comes from. Yeah,
it's like you said when we went closer to when we began. You know, it's how,
Nate,
you go about it.
This was a really great conversation. Yeah. Thank you, and you know, thank you for being you and
cool
for writing
stuff.
That book. It was great, and you know, I've started implementing it, and I'm really enjoying the standing meditation. It's very different. I'm more of a prone lying down kind of meditator. That's how I usually do it, but. This is different, and I'm enjoying it, and I would certainly encourage everyone to try it. And you know, I will put a link to your book and to your website, you know, in the description, so people can find it and buy it and find the benefit themselves. But thank you for coming on today, and you know, I look forward to potentially having you on again in the future sometime. There's a lot more to discuss. Thank you.